Hello and welcome to Distillations, weekly extracts from the past, present, and future of chemistry. I'm Robert Hicks. Each week we bring you stories on all things chemical, from voltage to vitamins. Today we're exploring the body chemical, how what we're made of affects our health. We'll look at a mysterious illness that confounded doctors for decades, and hear a report on the effect of trace elements in the human body. That's all coming up on Distillations. For centuries, Western medicine has looked at the human body as a system. This system requires equilibrium for optimal health, a balanced diet, emotional stability, and protection from harmful outside elements. This holistic view of bodily health has been around for hundreds of years, but it underwent a dramatic transformation in the 19th and 20th centuries as medical researchers began to pinpoint specific conditions, such as the presence of bacteria or the absence of a vitamin, as the ultimate cause of disease. In recent years, we seem to be coming full circle, as alternative health practices stress the importance of a balanced mind and body. To historians of medicine, these ideas sound very familiar. Which leads us to the element of the week. Today's element can't be found on the periodic table. In fact, it's hard to identify it as an element at all. But just as carbon and oxygen are now considered building blocks of all organic matter, this substance was once considered a basic building block of the human body. Black bile was one of the four humors, along with yellow bile, phlegm, and blood. The balance of these four elements in the body was believed not only to determine a person's health, but their personality as well. The theory, known as humorism, was first popularized by Hippocrates and was used consistently in Western medical practice until well into the 19th century. Each humor had a different quality and was associated with a different season. Black bile was an autumn humor, cold and dry, represented by the spleen. An excess of black bile was thought to cause sleeplessness, irritability, and despondency, or as it was known at the time, melancholia. Because disease was thought to result from an imbalance of the humors, treatments were designed to regulate their levels. Therapies like bleeding and cupping restored balance and were believed to bring the patient back to health. The concept of the four humors fell out of fashion in the late 19th century, but references to it still exist today. We've all had days of bad humor, and what we now think of as old wives' tales about drafts, wet feet, or going outside with wet hair can all be traced to a humoral interpretation of the body chemical. And that's it for the element of the week. Next up, we'd like to introduce you to Mystery Solved, a new segment where we'll take a look at one of science's chemical dilemmas. Today's mystery brings us back to the early 1900s when a strange illness began to affect Americans in the poor South. The Chemical Heritage Foundation's Erin McCleary has more.
Before 1907, the disease known as pellagra was relatively unknown in the United States. American physicians thought of it as a European scourge associated with the poorest parts of Italy. Pellagra was a strange and frightening disease, causing rough and scaly skin, serious diarrhea, severe forms of mental illness, and ultimately, if left untreated, death. In Italy, physicians linked the illness to an excess of polenta in the diet, an inexpensive corn dish widely consumed across the country. In the U.S., the disease was first identified in the South, a region that also featured a diet rich in corn bread, corn grits, corn whiskey. Physicians soon realized that pellagra had actually been present in the American South for some time, particularly in orphanages, hospitals, and prisons. But few could agree on why. Their only hypothesis was that corn was somehow at fault. Many researchers blamed the fungi and mold that grew on spoiled corn, or held some unidentified bacterium responsible for the pellagra epidemic. But the physicians and nurses who cared for sufferers of pellagra never succumbed to the disease. They also tended to eat a more varied diet than their poor and institutionalized patients. These observations convinced Joseph Goldberger, a physician with the U.S. Public Health Service, that pellagra could not be contagious and that corn alone was to blame. Of course, Goldberger was right. It was corn which caused pellagra. Or more specifically, pellagra was caused by what corn lacked, a substance we now call niacin, or vitamin B3. In the 19-teens, the concept of vitamins was still new. But a few decades later, once niacin was identified as the missing nutrient in the diet of pellagra patients, doctors began to recognize the vitamin's value. The amino acid tryptophan, a precursor to niacin, was added to bread and other foods to fortify them, virtually eliminating pellagra in the United States. Mystery solved. I'm Erin McCleary.
Erin McCleary is the curator of exhibitions for the Chemical Heritage Foundation. You can learn more about pellagra and other stories you've heard on our show by visiting our website, distillations.chemheritage.org. You're listening to Distillations. I'm Robert Hicks. Just as early doctors helped patients stay healthy by balancing the four humors, today's physicians encourage a healthy balance of vitamins and minerals. Distillations producer Amy Mayer has this report on the effect of these kinds of trace elements in the body.
The rows of nutritional supplements in a health food store offer elements from copper to zinc. Scanning the shelves can be daunting, especially when the less popular ones are on your mind. Amy Rothenberg is a naturopathic doctor whose profession requires extensive training in nutrition. She met me at a natural food store to sort through some of the options.
I was looking for this stuff that you sell for cardiovascular disease, sort of combination products.
She shakes a small brown bottle of pills containing selenium. That's an antioxidant she uses to prevent conditions that could lead to cardiovascular disease. It's also helpful, she says, in managing HIV and reducing inflammation. Unlike some trace elements, fluoride, for example, selenium can occur naturally in foods.
Well, one of the highest selenium content nuts are Brazil nuts, which you can see over here, these raw Brazil nuts. In this store, sold in bulk.
Though selenium's precise function in the body isn't clear, Rothenberg says people with critically low selenium tend to have thyroid problems. The science is more confident on some of the other trace elements. Your body needs iron to absorb oxygen. Fluoride bonds with the molecules in your teeth to strengthen them. It's bioinorganic chemists who puzzle these things out. Michael Maroney, a chemistry professor at the University of Massachusetts Amherst, has been studying trace elements for a quarter century.
Every textbook has a periodic table of the biological elements in it somewhere. It's right in the front. There it is. Okay, so all the elements here that are colored in, and you can see that it's almost half the elements on the periodic chart, have some biological role.
Like nickel, for example. Maroney says there's no known specific function for nickel in the human body.
And yet we know that people whose diets are devoid of nickel are not well.
The element's role in the body likely relates to our intestinal bacteria. Maroney says the bacteria in our digestive system often require nickel for metabolism. Although the human nutritional need for nickel is tiny, he says its function in bacteria could have human health implications.
If you don't have a nickel metabolism, and the bacteria do, you could develop something that might mess up the nickel metabolism that would hurt the bacteria's ability to survive, but not the person's ability to survive.
As Maroney studies nickel as a potential player in fighting bacterial infections, the rest of us might start looking a little more closely at labels in the health food store. With almost half of the elements involved in human health, chances are good you're ingesting more of the periodic table than you thought. For Distillations, I'm Amy Mayer.
Amy Mayer is a reporter based in Western Massachusetts. And that's it for this episode of Distillations. This week's quotation is from Albert Szent-Györgyi, winner of the 1937 Nobel Prize in Medicine for his studies of vitamin C. A vitamin is a substance that makes you ill if you don't eat it. Distillations is a presentation of the Chemical Heritage Foundation and is made possible by the generous support of the Richard Lounsbery Foundation. Mia Lobel is our senior producer. Our assistant producer is Victoria Indivero, and our executive producer is Audra Wolf. Our theme music is composed and performed by Dave Kaufman. Additional music provided from the PodSafe Music Network. Check it out at music.podshow.com. Please tell us what you think about our program and send suggestions for future shows to distillations@chemheritage.org. Until next time, I'm Robert Hicks.